Hello everyone, you're welcome to another edition of Breakout with BD. I'm excited to be back on the show. I hope you had a fantastic week, and I would like to use this opportunity to wish you a happy new month. I hope April will bring you the best of spring and the flowers and all of that. Last week we were talking about something very touching, and we looked at human trafficking. Specifically, we looked at the recipe of modern-day slavery. And last week, we were unable to exhaust the factors we were considering. And over the week, I thought about a couple of things before coming on air today, and I felt that I should be more focused in addressing this issue. And I would like to focus more on the home front. And I'll be looking at human trafficking like I promised last week, but with a greater focus on the contribution and the role of the domestic home front or the household towards the illicit success of the human trafficking industry in the world today. As you all know, last week we had a comprehensive definition of human trafficking, and we know that it's a crime against humanity, it's a crime against children, women, it's a crime against the world. We also know that even though many people know the effects of this menace on the lives of its victims, it has continued to proliferate, and basically because of the greed of the people involved in the cycle of human trafficking. Now, I would not want to take you to the long definition I took you to last week on human trafficking, but I would like to just chip in one a kind of statement about human trafficking from a definition gotten from the United States Department of State. It calls human trafficking a multi-dimensional issue affecting both the victim and the country. And now, human trafficking is not only traumatic and debilitating for the victim, but it's a crime that increases global health risk. It fuels growing networks of organized crimes and can sustain levels of poverty and impede development in certain areas. Now, victims of human trafficking usually suffer physical and emotional abuse, rape, threats against self and family, and even death. But this devastation also extends beyond individual victims. Human trafficking undermines the health, safety, and security of all the nation it touches. That said, I told you that we'll be focusing on the home front today, and basically we'll consider the factors that we as a household have allowed to proliferate behind our doors, behind the closed doors of our homes, and we have unwittingly and unknowingly encouraged or promoted human trafficking. Now, the recipes, which is the title of today's discussion, which is a continuation of what we talked about last week, is also known as the factors that has contributed to the success of human trafficking in the world today. And with respect to the home front or the contributions of each household, we'll start by looking at domestic violence. And when we talk about violence, we are talking about the use of physical force that is intended to hurt or kill, and it usually results in a crime. Now, exposure to violence can occur in two ways. It can occur either with a person as a target of that violence or with a person as a witness of that violence. Now, either way, domestic violence affects these people's views and ideas about themselves and the meaning and purpose of life and their expectation for future happiness. Also, it affects their moral development and their world. Now, domestic violence usually coexists with a number of factors, and one of such factors is poverty. Now, in many homes where poverty is, it has been entrenched in that place, it's the possibility of having domestic violence occurring there is very high, because with poverty comes lack, with lack comes anger, and with anger comes violence. So in many homes where we have a high incidence of poverty, where they have no means of providing for themselves, of meeting the needs of their families, meeting the needs of their loved ones, they can't put food on their table, they can't clothe themselves, they can't get a roof over their heads, they don't even have access, they can't afford to go to a hospital or have access to medical or care, and they can't even make decisions that affect their well-being in life. These factors generally contribute to poverty and equally affects the occurrence of domestic violence in that home front. We also have factors like neglect, poor nutrition, parents' unemployment, overcrowding, substance abuse, which includes the use of alcohol, lack of adequate medical care, and parent psychopathology. Now, all of these factors work together to promote domestic violence, and like I mentioned earlier, it coexists with these factors. I mentioned the cases of neglect, where we have children or family members who are left on their own, who are not provided for. Neglect usually is a deliberate form of not performing your duty as a parent to your children or the members of your family, and just letting them be without caring, without providing, without being concerned about them. Poor nutrition is when you don't have a balanced diet, when you don't feed well, you don't have good food on your table, you are malnourished, you don't have the necessary composition of a good diet for you to grow and do well in life. And you have a lot of malnourished children who are sickly, who eventually die, who don't have the best lives that they should have because of poor nutrition. We also have cases of overcrowding because cases like illiteracy and ignorance, many people just, they can't plan their families. They keep on giving birth to so many children, and the homes are overcrowded. And with this comes a lot of tension and strife in the home front, and this can trigger domestic violence. I talked about substance abuse, and I made reference to alcohol, especially in homes where either the parents are alcoholics. Domestic violence is always an issue in that home, because these parents, they kind of go off, you know, at one point or the other, in form of rage towards their children or the members of their family. And I also talked about lack of adequate medical care. This also results in domestic violence, because when you don't have the resources to access medical care, you don't have the resources to access healthcare facilities, there's anger, there's this feeling of rejection, there's this feeling of desperation, and they all can lead to domestic violence. And I talked about parent psychopathology, and this also involves mental illness or distress or a kind of maladaptive behavior of parents. So we have parents who are not sound, who are probably sick mentally, and these people also are prone to become very violent towards their children and other members of their family. Now, targets and witnesses of domestic violence are victims, and when you are a victim of domestic violence, you become vulnerable to trafficking because of one major reason. You want to leave that home front and look for happiness elsewhere. And in your quest of looking for happiness, you get offers to move out of your home, whether to another location within your country or outside your country. And because you have no other option, these people are poor, they can't afford a good life, and you have no other option, they jump at the offer and eventually become victims of human trafficking. We'll be right back after this short break. Don't go anywhere. If you're just joining us, this is Baker with BD on the BBS Radio Station 1. This is a program that talks about cases and incidences of abuse and talks about how we can learn to equip ourselves better to protect ourselves, protect our loved ones from being victims of abusive situations. At the moment, we are considering the issues of human trafficking, and the topic of today is the recipe of modern day slavery. Now, if this is a live program, and I encourage you to call in to share your views, opinions, and questions with me. If you are calling from US or Canada, you can call into our toll free line, which is 888-815-9756. Also, if you want to call from any other country aside the United States or Canada, you can call into the direct lines of the station, which I would call out quickly. Now, line 1 is 530-327-7602. Line 2 is 530-413-4510. And line 3 is 530-413-4510. So please feel free call into the program and let's get talking about this exciting and educative topic of human trafficking that we can learn something about and make a whole difference in our world today. Now, we're going to be looking at the second factor which has encouraged human trafficking and which is a result of the contributory role of most households in the traffickers' country, the contributory role of households or the home front. And the second factor is the lack of social capital. Now, I'll define the meaning of social capital. And social capital simply means the institutions, relationships, and norms that shape the quality and the quantity of a society's social interactions. Now, a lot of increasing evidences show that social cohesion is critical for societal economic prosperity and sustainable development. Now, when we're talking about social capital, we're going to be looking at the components that make up social capital. And the first of it is having a high level of trust within family and community. There should be a high level of trust within the family and the community. Then the second component is the presence of vibrant social networks. Now, the third component is the presence of strong institutions such as family, church, police. The list is endless. Now, the fourth component is a strong faith in the existing government. Now, these four components make up a country's social capital. And funny enough, this social capital emanates from the home front, emanates from households. Now, when there is no social capital, or where social capital is lacking, we have a particular characteristic, and that is the absence or lack of confidence in the people you interact with. These people could include your neighbors, community members, institutions around you. And when you lack confidence in these people, it's easy for you to be exploited. Now, in many of these countries where victims of human trafficking come from, these countries have their social capital has been broken down. There's a lot of distrust between people. People don't trust each other. Family members don't trust the family members even within the household. Family A probably does not trust family B, and there's a lot of distrust within the community as well. Then there's this absence of vibrant social networks, because every community is linked with a particular social network, but there's an absence of this network, and with that absence there's a kind of breakdown in the relationship between individuals, families in that community. And like I said, the social capital is made up of institutions, relationships, and norms. So relationships matter a lot in social capital. And then when we don't have, when we have a breakdown in social capital, we also have weak institutions such as family, church, police. We have the family can't make decisions that can protect or guide or lead its members aright. The church probably is also handicapped. They can't probably act as intermediaries or mediate whenever cases for such arise. The police is weak, probably because they are corrupt and the community or the people in that area has lost faith in them. And then I talked about faith in the existing government, where we have a breakdown of social capital. The faith in the government is almost zero. Well, probably because these governments have institutionalized the violation of human rights. I talked about that last week. And in governments where human rights are not respected, are not cared for, people feel unsafe there and would want to leave that place and move to another place. And with that, we get a lot of moving out, a lot of migration out of that place to another place with promises of a better future, a safer future, with promises of security, which is something that matters to every human being. Because once security is taken care of, people have this peace of mind to be able to pursue better job opportunities, get a better means of livelihood. And when these things are promised to these victims from their countries, they promise them security, they promise them good job opportunities and better standards of living in the countries where they are going to, they become easy prey for exploitation and eventually may become victims of human trafficking. So when we have the social capital lacking, it's a really big deal of a problem. Now, the third factor we'll be looking at is the increased migration pressures. Now, with increased migration pressures, we're going to be looking at internal and external migration. Now, basically, internal and external migration is usually a coping strategy for many families that are impoverished or who are displaced or sometimes destitute. Now, their choice to migrate is motivated by factors such as chronic poverty, lack of employment, underemployment, lack of access to markets, schools, or jobs due to centralization in urban areas. Now, we have the availability of the markets and schools and jobs. You don't find them in rural areas. You find them more in the urban areas, and they are centralized there. So these people have to move away, move out of the rural areas, move to the urban areas. And if you remember last week, I told you that human trafficking, it doesn't have to be across the borders. It can be within that place. A country can be a source, can be a transit, and can be a destination or place for trafficking. So we could have human trafficking occurring within a particular country, and it occurs where there's a centralization of markets, schools, jobs, health and care facilities, and so on. You have such cases that promoting human trafficking. We also have materialism. Now, with materialism, we have very high or unrealistic expectations of wealth. This is very common in some places in Africa, where you have to make money at all costs. You have to make it at all costs, and you know this ideology forces a lot of young people into doing unscrupulous things, into doing things that are criminal, just to be able to make money and come back home and brag about it. So materialism is a bait that many human trafficking pimps use in getting these victims and keeping them indebted to them for life. We also have cases where some of these families are indebted. Now, when you have a family who is indebted to probably another family or to somebody, and they don't have the opportunity they don't have the resources, rather, to pay that debt, you find them opting for their children to be migrated out of their homes to other places, maybe other places within that country or across the borders to another country, probably in Europe or America, because they believe they will get a better job opportunity, and with that they'll be able to pay for the debts that those family or those parents are owing. We also have cases of natural disasters such as droughts and floods. Now this can also increase migration pressures, so it can force people to move out of their homes to other places, looking for better opportunities, better economic opportunities, better job opportunities, better means of livelihood, and all of that. Now, I've talked about lack of employment and underemployment. Without employment, there's no way you can provide for yourself. When somebody is jobless or is underemployed, he's not paid enough, he's not doing enough job to earn enough to make a living, you find out that such people are also impoverished, and with that comes the desperation to make more money and move out to seek for better opportunities, and then they are likely to be exploited and trafficked. Now, these people who are under the increased migration pressure are lured overseas and also lured to other urban areas with promises and hopes for better job opportunities and higher wages, like I said earlier. And they thereafter find themselves doing some funny kind of jobs. I coined mine now the 4D work. And the first D means dirty. The second D means dangerous. The fourth D means disliked. And the fourth D means difficult. Now, these 4Ds encompasses the kind of jobs they do when they leave their homes to other locations or other countries to seek or look or to search out for better job opportunities. They find themselves doing this kind of jobs. Besides, illegal migrations are very attractive to many of these potential victims because it's cheaper. Sometimes for you to move from your country to the destination country, they're going to go through the legal means and pay the normal amount. You might end up paying so much, but when you have to go through the illegal migration procedure and using people who probably smuggle people and eventually traffic them, they charge quite less. So it's attractive, and a lot of people fall for this bait and eventually become victims of human trafficking. We'll be back after this break. I want you to think through what I've said, and we'll probably talk more about it when we come back. Well, you're welcome to the show. This is Breakout with BD, and my name is BD Nelson. I'm your girl next door. Couldn't be any better. I'm looking at a recipe for modern day slavery, and I'm looking at how each and every household or family or home front has contributed to the success of human trafficking and what we can do to make a difference starting from our homes. Now, we'll be looking at another factor that has contributed or through which we have contributed to the success of human trafficking, and that is through our dysfunctional cultures. Now, many cultures support and encourage patriarchy, where the man is expected to work and provide for the home and also make decisions, while the woman is expected to be the mother and the wife. Now, where patriarchy is celebrated or embraced, we have a lot of gender inequality because the man is apparently placed a lot higher and above the woman folk, and with that comes discrimination, and also comes abuse, and also comes exploitation. Now, when a man is expected to work and provide for the home and make decisions, and the wife is expected to just be a mother, probably a baby-producing machine, and the wife probably just to satisfy his sexual needs, then what's the essence of being a woman in the first place? So some cultures are dysfunctional. And we also have issues of gender discrimination, like I mentioned earlier, where women and children are denied of their rights. For instance, their rights to education, rights to participation in decisions that concern them, rights to expression. Many women, many children cannot express, cannot even hold opinions, and they can't express how they feel about issues that concerns them. Some have been denied their rights to protection from abuse and assault. And a lot of other rights of women and children that have been denied, you know, of them. And with that comes expectation in its whole sense. In some homes, the literacy level of boys are higher than those of the girls. We have in some homes where maybe they can't afford to train all their children in school. When it comes to making a decision as to whom goes to school, they choose the boy child over the girl child because they believe the boy child is apparently higher in his gender. He's a higher class person in relation to the girl, and the girl child probably has to sit back with the mom and help out doing domestic work at home. Some other cultures and attitudes tolerate violence to women and children. And when a culture tolerates violence to children, it can lead to objectification. Now, the women and children are now treated as mere objects to be sold and trafficked into unfavorable living and working conditions. So a culture that tolerates and allows violence allows children and women to be treated as objects, which is what victims of human trafficking are considered as. They are commodified. They are treated as mere commodities to be bought and sold. So with a dysfunctional culture comes exploitation, and comes the increased illicit success of human trafficking. Also, some other cultures promote sex before marriage as being a stigma. Now, they believe if you have sex after marriage, it's honorable. But for men, having sex before marriage is okay. Now, sex before marriage for women is wrong, but sex before marriage for men is okay because men are permitted to be polygamous in nature. I'll just give you a popular Cambodian phrase which says that men are gold while women are cloth. Now, this emphasizes the deep-rooted inequality between men and women and exemplifies the dysfunctional cultural views that men are superior to women. First, a woman who has sex before marriage is seen as a worthless piece of clothing, worthy only of being traded upon and also trafficked to earn money. You can see what some cultures are doing to actually promote human trafficking. Now, we also have some other cultures that believe and propagate that children owe their parents Now, the higher the number of children, the higher the tendency to make wealth. So we have a lot of people giving birth to so many children so that they can earn money off these children. But these children are expected to work. They move them out or sell them out into forced labor, into the sex industry, into pornography or through sex tourism, and force them to work and earn a living because they believe it's because they are your children, they owe those parents, and as a result, must work to support those parents, must work to pay back those parents for taking care of them in the first place. And this obviously promotes human trafficking and slavery. So that's some of the dysfunctional cultures that many homes practice, you know, behind closed doors, and that dictates the relationship between the father, the mother, the boy, and the girl child in the home. So some of these cultures are actually barbaric, are wrong, are cruel, are mean, and should be kicked out, if you ask me. Now, the next factor we'll be considering is our indifference to pornography. The sad truth is that pornography is seeping into every home, and we have cases where parents do not supervise the content of what their children are exposed to in the media. Sometimes pornography has become so pervasive that it is now moving into some public places, sometimes like coffee houses. Now, the availability of pornography to children has profound effects on general attitudes of people to sexuality and sexual practice, and this potentially normalizes sexual abuse and prostitution for children and young people. So, where pornography is available and is accepted, we have this normalization mentality about sexual abuse and prostitution, sexual exploitation when it involves children and young people. So there's nothing wrong when you see a child being abused sexually. You feel there's nothing wrong. You're probably indifferent when you see a young person being sexually exploited. In fact, this probably is the genesis of child pornography, which is the consequence of the exploitation or sexual abuse perpetrated against a child. It's also any means of depicting or promoting sexual abuse of a child, including print, audio, and is usually centered on sexual acts or the genital organs of children. Besides, pornography is used to teach brothel workers what is expected of them. Women and children are also being exploited in the production of pornography, which is readily available on streets or streamed over the internet. Now, the truth is, until our attitude to pornography changes, and especially in our preventing its availability to our children and other young people in our homes, we are unwittingly grooming these young people, these children, for sexual exploitation. We are preparing them for sexual abuse and moving them into the sexual and human trafficking business, and we are doing it. Unintentionally, so we really have to check it when it comes to issues of pornography. Now, the last one I would like to talk about for now will be embracing sexual exploitation as a means of livelihood or survival. And many families embrace and approve of the sexual exploitation of children and young people as a money-making venture. This is especially true of countries where sex tourism is the icing on the cake for many of its foreign visitors. Now, virginity is highly priced, with people paying as much as $800 to $4,000 to have sex with virgins. Sex commercialization and sex trafficking go hand in hand. There are so many cases in some countries where the mother initiates the sale of her child for as low as $50, and with the celebration of virgin prostitutes comes a medical procedure called hymenoplasty. Now, hymenoplasty is the stitching up of the hymen after it has been broken over and over again. So when there is this strong increase or strong liking or increased demand for virgin prostitutes, it also comes a high an increase in the medical procedures called hymenoplasty, and that involves stitching up of the hymen of this victim after it has been broken over and over again. Now, most times this procedure is done without anesthetics and it's not done in a proper medical facility, which will lead to infections, diseases, sicknesses, even death of this young person or this young girl. Now, there are so many myths surrounding having sex with a vaginal. Such myths include having sex with them can bring about rejuvenation. It can give strength to the person having sex with them. It can bring about longer life. It can bring about lightening of the skin. It can also cure some diseases. That's really funny. Now, this myth has promoted the sale of victims by their own household into human trafficking. So you see how some households have actually contributed to the buying and selling of their family members just to earn a living. Now, we'll go to the last point for the day because my time is almost up. We'll be looking at dysfunctional parenting. Now, dysfunctional parenting is a case where you have parents who are incapable of parenting the proper way. Now, I was studying a research work done by Chris Thiessen, and I fell in love with his the way he branded dysfunctional parenting. And he talked about seven types of parenting that can become dysfunctional. He talked about some of the traits that these parents can have. And he looked at the first one, which is anxiety. Now, parents who raise their children with an overall sense of nervousness and worry actually are very anxious parents, and this is a dysfunctional kind of parenting. We also talked about hostility and anger, and with this he was talking about parents who are never satisfied or accepting of their child. They yell, they threaten, they demean, and even physically harass their children to get their immediate compliance. They always use a negative voice tone in their everyday interaction with their children. This is also dysfunctional. Now, the third one is the emotional parenting. Now, this kind of parents are scared or afraid to dish out punishment with the fear that the child might get upset. Now, these parents appease their own emotional needs and not those of their children. They are sometimes easily manipulated. So, they are obviously not capable of parenting in the first place. Now, the fourth type of dysfunctional parenting is the CEO type of parent. Now, this parent runs the home like a business. Each family member is subordinate and is expected to perform his duties as expected. The interactions at home are cold and business-like. So we have a bossy parent at home running the home like a business firm. Do this, do that, giving instructions. Well, you know what to expect. Apparently, you would have subordinate children who can't relate with those parents the way they should. And that home apparently is not the kind of home a normal child should be in. Now, the fifth type of dysfunctional parent is the absent parent. Now, this parent is absent physically and emotionally. He has no connection or bond with his children. But a lot of parents fall into this line because of work commitments and other excuses they bring. They kind of offer, but it doesn't. It's not enough. If you're gonna be a parent, be a good one. Please be involved in your children's lives. Now, the sixth form of dysfunctional parenting is the Siamese twins. And now, with this parenting comes an overly connected parent who is connected to the children. They maintain very poor boundaries and are too involved in their children's lives, influencing every decision and intruding in their lives at every level. Now, there comes a time they get too much for the children, and all hell breaks loose, I guess. Now, the seventh form of dysfunctional parenting is the casual observer. Now, this kind of parent simply sits back and watches the kids grow up with little or no involvement and connection. They have a roommate kind of relationship with their children. They are quite permissive and set few limits or boundaries with their children. Now, when you have a home where dysfunctional parenting is the order of the day, especially with this kind of traits that I've mentioned, you have a poor relationship with parents and children, and with that, you have parents who are not capable of parenting the proper way. And when you have a cases of an incapable parent, it's easy for child traffickers to penetrate into that home and make friends with your children and steal them away from you, abduct them or deceive them into moving away from home. So you have a lot of runaway teens as a result of dysfunctional home front or dysfunctional upbringing. And with runaway teens comes vulnerability to being trafficked by human traffickers. Well, it's been an exciting time out with each and every one of you today. I want to thank you for listening to the program. I appreciate those of you who have communicated with me over the week. Like I said, things can only get better. Let's try and be nice to somebody, especially the children. Human trafficking is a crime. It should be stopped. I've talked about ways we as members of a family, we as the home front or as the household, has supported and promoted human trafficking. And we can all make amends. It's never too late to make the needed changes to be a part of the war against human trafficking. It's a joint responsibility. Remember our parting phrase. Be the part of the change that is fair. It starts with your intention. I love you all. I'll catch up with you next week, where we'll continue with the life in slavery. It's still talking about human trafficking. It's going to be very exciting. You don't want to miss it. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.